This is the introductory paragraph for Pantograph Part 1.
Good afternoon. This is Susan. I'll be reading today from the Pantograph for Friday, April 7th, 2017. Beginning on the first page with this headline, $33 million expansion begins at Westminster Village. The future of a longtime Bloomington continuing care retirement community began Thursday with a ceremonial groundbreaking for a $33 million expansion and renovation. This is a day to give thanks and a day to celebrate, Westminster Village CEO Barb Nathan said before the ceremony, attended by about 200 people in the Social Center of Westminster, 2025 East Lincoln Street, Bloomington. Dozens of other residents watched the ceremony on closed-circuit television. This phase of expansion is essential to Westminster remaining the successful retirement facility that it is today, said the board president, Jay Reese. The ceremony, conducted indoors to keep residents out of the weather, marked the start of construction for phase one of a three-phase expansion and renovation that could total $70 million. The $33 million first phase will include a new entrance building off Mercer Avenue, expansion and renovation of common areas, and expansion and renovation of Westminster's Martin Heath Center Skilled Care Building. The common area construction will include renovating the dining room from one large room to six smaller dining rooms, a larger wellness area, and more space for a library, medical clinic, art studio, beauty shop, and meeting rooms. We're trying to create more of a sense of community, Nathan explained. Martin Health Center will be renovated and expanded to increase its capacity to 96 beds, which will translate to 80 private rooms and 8 semi-private rooms. With approvals in hand from city and state officials, site work has begun, and phase one should be complete by July 2019. 10% of the $33 million will come from Westminster reserves, and the balance would be financed, Nathan said. Carolyn Johnston, president of the Westminster Residents Council, said Westminster has 340 residents and 300 people on a waiting list. This is a great day for Westminster, Johnston said after the ceremony, while conceding that some residents are concerned about construction noise and dust. She said completion of phase one will mean enhanced services, including more private rooms for Martin Health Center residents. Residents want private rooms, she said. What we're about is the residents first, said Bonnie Jensen, a housekeeper and resident's longest-serving employee, beginning in December 1979. This will be great for them, Jensen said. Quality of care will improve. Westminster, which opened in 1979, comprises 176 independent living apartments, 22 independent living townhouses, 52 assisted living apartments, and 78 skilled care nursing home beds at Martin Health Center. Westminster has 215 employees. In phase one, we will add 20 employees and 18 licensed beds, said Nathan. After phase one is complete, work will begin on phase two, which will be constructing a new assisted living building with 60 assisted living units and 12 memory care units. Phase three will be renovating the existing assisted living building to 40 independent living units and possibly adding additional independent living buildings later. And we'll move now to this next article. No cause yet in fatal 2015 plane crash near Central Illinois Regional Airport. Federal investigators still are not saying what caused the April 7th, 2015 plane crash near Central Illinois Regional Airport that killed seven Twin City area men. a final report that includes all pertinent facts, conditions, and circumstances of this accident will be issued upon completion, along with the National Transportation Safety Board's analysis and probable cause, according to a 14-page interim factual summary report issued Thursday. The summary provides more details on the 12:06 a.m. crash, but will be amended with more information, confirmed NTSB Air Safety Investigator Todd Fox. He said he couldn't estimate when the report will be finalized. Killed in the crash that took place 2 years ago Friday were pilot Tom Heilman and six passengers, Tori Ward and Aaron Leach from Illinois State University's Athletic Department, Terry Strelo, co-owner of Pub 2 in Normal, Scott Bittner, owner of Eureka Locker Company, Andy Butler, National Account Manager of Sprint Nextel, and Jason Jones, Senior Vice President, Investment Officer at Secord Jones Wealth Management Group. The summary states the plane was overloaded, which can contribute to the pilot losing control, and the weather, as reported at the time of the crash, was very poor at the airport during the plane's approach. Calculations estimated that at the time of the accident, the airplane was 366 pounds over the maximum landing weight, according to the summary. If the loaded airplane results in a center of gravity that is aft, which is nearer to the plane's rear, of the allowable limits, the plane can become unstable and difficult to recover from an aerodynamic stall. The summary also notes declining visibility and fog at CIRA between 9:56 p.m. April 6th and 12:05 a.m. April 7th. About an hour before the flight departed, CIRA equipment reported 10-mile surface visibility, according to the summary. About a minute before the accident, CIRA equipment reported a half-a-mile surface visibility with light rain and fog. The summary also suggests Heilman was not fatigued during the flight. His wife, it states, reported that he was in good health and sleeping well. The men were returning from the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship game in Indianapolis at the time of the crash. They had close ties to the ISU Athletics Department, and a memorial to them now stands near Redbird Arena in Normal. A year after the crash, their families started Project 7, an effort to honor the men's legacy and encourage Twin City residents to be kind to each other by completing acts of kindness for others. And let's move now to some state news. NEIU to cancel 3 days of classes. Northeastern Illinois University is planning to cancel 3 days of classes in order to cut costs as public universities in Illinois struggle to make ends meet during the state's budget stalemate. The Chicago-based university will no longer hold classes on April 11th, 12th, and May 1st. Illinois has been without a budget for 21 months and has a bill backlog of $12.9 billion. Northeastern University Interim President Richard Heldobler called the state's unprecedented budget impasse a state of emergency for the school. A statement from the university says administrators are also speaking with labor unions that represent their employees as school officials contemplate a school-wide shutdown for those 3 dates. A complete closure would be the second wave announced by the university in less than a month. The university required its employees to take 5 days off over spring break. And let's move now to this. Montessori School celebrates 20 years of growth. A chorus of tiny voices echoed in a classroom at Montessori Children's Center in Bloomington on Thursday. This garden keeps on blooming, and we're the seeds you sow. We started out so very small, but look at how we've grown, sang the young students to their teachers. The song was part of an event celebrating 20 years of preschool learning at the facility at 3 Yount Drive in Bloomington. The center, one of hundreds of Montessori schools in the country and around the world, is an academic preschool and kindergarten for 3 to 4-year-olds. Barb Broach and her daughter, Amy Moser, opened the Bloomington location in 1997 and continue to guide students and teachers. Broach's daughter-in-law, Rachel Broach, also helps lead the school. It started in 1997 with 14 kids on the first day. By 3 months, we were at full capacity with 40 kids in the building. 4 years later, we moved, and the number increased to 50. After we built our current building, we increased to 3 classrooms with 60 children, said Barb Broach, who calls herself the resident grandma. Moser said students are eager to learn at such a young age, and their brains are like a sponge. When work time is cut short because of a special event, the kids are disappointed. They love school. This age range is the foundation for their learning, so they learn to love school now. It will really pave the way for their future education, said Moser. Parents packed a classroom for the anniversary party. Students applauded for their teachers and listened to the history of the school. The youngsters waved streamers as their teachers held a globe and walked around the sun 20 times, a birthday tradition at the school. A metal sculpture also was unveiled to celebrate the milestone, and it will be placed in the school's garden. Montessori teaches children about independence, which is especially important before grade school because it prepares them to learn in a different way, said Angela Tusing of Normal, mother of Addie, age 4. Erica Lockett of Bloomington said her son, CJ, age 4, has attended Montessori for nearly a year, and he has become more responsible and respectful. I never thought I'd find an academic environment that cared about kids this much, Lockett said. I believe in everything the school does holistically, academically, and socially. I wanted to be here to celebrate what they've done for 20 years, and I hope they do it for 20 more. Barb Broach said she hopes to continue to see the school touch lives. If we can feel in 20 years the way we feel now, that we have made a difference and impacted the blessed the community, that's all I want, she said, with tears in her eyes. And let's move now to this. Refugee speaks to value of strong kids program. Less than 2 years ago, Jose Patino and his wife Nayla and their sons Jose and Miguel fled Venezuela after their lives were threatened by political police. On Thursday, Jose Patino thanked some people who welcomed him and his family to Bloomington Normal. We leave home with 4 suitcases, Patino told 220 people at the Bloomington Normal YMCA at 602 South Main Street. But here in Bloomington Normal, we found home. All of you have been a blessing for us, Patino said. Thursday's event was the 2017 YMCA Strong Kids campaign kickoff. In the campaign, people donate money to help cover part of the cost of YMCA membership for people who can't afford it. Jose, age 10, and Miguel, age 8, students at McLean County Unit 5 Cedar Ridge Elementary School in Bloomington, attend YPALS, the YMCA before and after school program at Cedar Ridge, so their parents can work. Because the Patinos couldn't afford the full cost of Y membership, they applied for and received a scholarship that allows them to pay a discounted fee, Patino said. Scholarships are covered by donations to the Strong Kids campaign. Last year, YMCA provided 2,360 scholarships, valued at $204,190, YMCA Executive Director B.J. Wilkins said. The amount of each scholarship depends on household income and size. The goal for this year's campaign, chaired by Connie Mandula and Chad Beatty, is $200,000. If reached, about 2,500 people could receive access to YMCA membership and programs, Wilkins said. Last year's campaign raised $193,725. Patino, who is 45, told the Pantograph the government in Venezuela was oppressive and left people with daily challenges such as waiting in line for hours for milk, searching garbage cans for food, and living with rationed water and electricity. We work toward democracy, Patino said, but after he became politically active, the window of his car was broken by political police who threatened his wife, and then the police came to his home and threatened him if he persisted. They came to Bloomington Normal because he's friends with Dr. Gustavo Galou with OSF Medical Group. They lived in his basement for 3 months and did volunteer work until Jose Patino was hired as a project manager with Millennium Pain Center and his wife was hired as a bilingual family liaison for Unit 5. They now rent a home in Normal, and Patino continues his volunteer work at the community health care clinic. "We came here with almost nothing, and you guys, as a community, help us," said Patino, who has applied for political asylum. "We came here to be part of American society." "They're not looking for anything free," Wilkins said. "They're looking for help, so they can give back to the community. Strong Kids helps people who want to better themselves and better their community." And moving now to this headline, billionaire J.B. Pritzker running for Illinois governor. Billionaire J.B. Pritzker touted his business record and progressive values Thursday as he kicked off his campaign for Illinois governor, raising the financial stakes in what was already expected to be a costly and competitive fight to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Pritzker wasted little time in blasting the venture capitalist turned governor, even comparing him to President Donald Trump. Rauner has been at odds with the Democrat-controlled legislature since he took office. Governor Rauner talks about what he might have done or what he's tried to get done. "It's past time for all his talk. It's time for action," Pritzker told the crowd of union officials and community leaders gathered at a park facility in a predominantly African-American neighborhood on the city's south side. "Everything we care about is under siege by Donald Trump and Bruce Rauner." Pritzker joins a growing field of Democrats who've said they'll seek their party's nomination in the March gubernatorial primary that includes State Senator Daniel Biss, Chicago Alderman Amaya Pawar, and businessman Chris Kennedy, who is the nephew of former President John F. Kennedy. An heir to the Hyatt Hotel's fortune, Pritzker was recently ranked by Forbes magazine as the third wealthiest person in Illinois, with an estimated net worth of about $3.4 billion. That easily makes him the wealthiest person running, though Rauner, a multimillionaire who put $50 million into his own campaign fund last year, also has received millions in campaign contributions from Illinois' richest person, businessman Ken Griffin. Pritzker, age 52, acknowledged his own wealth and opportunity. He said his first job was washing sheets in his parents' hotels and that his mother raised him with an abiding sense of social justice. "I wake up each morning knowing that I need to work hard to earn what I've been given," he said. He added that Illinois is losing jobs and opportunities because of inaction by Rauner and the state needs to first tax its millionaires and billionaires before the middle class. And now for some more local news. Workplace accident victim identified. The DeWitt County Coroner has released the name of a Clinton man who died Thursday in a workplace accident. Kerry S. Daniels, age 57, was pronounced dead at 10:35 a.m. at McElroy Metal Service Center after a load of sheet metal fell on him, according to the DeWitt County Coroner Randy Rice. An autopsy is scheduled Friday. Reed's office is continuing to investigate the death, along with the Clinton Police Department and the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. The Clinton Fire Department, DeWitt County Emergency Medical Services, and Clinton Police responded to a report at 9:51 a.m. on Thursday that a plant worker had been injured, said Interim Fire Chief Jason Carr. The plant on the southeastern edge of Clinton at 10490 Illinois 10 manufactures metal roofs, siding, and panels. So far, the company officials have declined to comment. And we'll move now to this next article, and that headline: Malls will survive, including Eastland. Eastland Mall in Bloomington may be losing major retailers, but will survive in the long run, said the president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. I think because it is Bloomington Normal, it will ultimately be okay, because there are a lot of advantages here and a lot of people to support it, said Rob Carr, who was the keynote speaker at Thursday's Bloomington Normal by the Numbers program at Illinois State University's Bones Student Center. There is Illinois State University, Illinois Wesleyan, State Farm, and some big companies headquartered here. It may take some hits, but in the end, I believe it will bounce back. Eastland anchor Macy's closed last month, and JCPenney has announced its plan to close its store at the mall, where several smaller retailers already have closed. Gordman's at Shops of College Hills in Normal also will close. Carr told a crowd of about 250 business leaders that retailers, particularly those in Illinois, are going through a tough time. "I have a lot of sleepless nights," he said. "Much of the blame is often being laid at the feet of online sales. But currently, of all total retail sales, only 8% is e-commerce. You would think that by listening to media reports, it would be more like 80%. But it's only 8%, and the rest is from traditional brick-and-mortar stores." Carr said the e-commerce trade is growing, and it is more than just websites and laptops that are driving those sales. "It's the smartphones," he said. "Believe it or not, the iPhone turns 10 on June 29th. It feels like it's been around forever. Think about the amazing changes. Now you can purchase anything you want, music, clothes, even cars, and you don't have to get them locally." Malls will be able to compete in the future, he said, but they are going to be different than what you might see today. There will be fewer anchor stores, and more major retailers will switch to pop-up stores that carry a smaller variety of items, but will have access to the larger number of products that can be delivered to the customer within a matter of days. "Indoor malls are not dead, but they are going to have to change if they expect to survive," he said. "They're not going to be as they once were. They're going to have to be repurposed. They're going to have to be far more engaging and interactive, just as brick and mortars are going to have to be. The consumer doesn't want just selection and customized offers. They want to be entertained, and the malls are going to have to understand that. Some malls are experimenting with bowling alleys, and some are beginning to attract grocery stores. 5 years ago, that would have been unthinkable. Medical offices, schools, government offices, or even residential living, or some combination thereof, is the direction we are headed." Kyle Hamm, CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, which sponsored the event, also has concerns about the retail industry. "The news about the retail industry has hit us like a tsunami," he said. "It's probably going to trend that way for a while. But if we work together in the same direction, we can make it a better day for us." And let's move now to this. BCPA's Regan show on sale Friday. Tickets for comedian Brian Regan's rescheduled show at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts went on sale at 10 a.m. today, Friday. Tickets for the 7:30 p.m. September 10th performance, priced at $38 and $48, will be available at the BCPA ticket office in person or by phone or online at www.artsblooming.org. The show, which marks Regan's first ever Twin Cities appearance, was originally scheduled for January 8th. It was postponed in December due to a scheduling conflict with what were described as the comedian's other professional commitments. And now this headline, and it reads, Blue Bow campaign activities target child abuse. Children's Home and Aid, which offers programs supporting Central Illinois parents in times of family stress and crisis, will kick off its Blue Bow campaign with a balloon release at 10 a.m. Friday. The blue bow signifies hidden bruises of abused children and is the national symbol of child abuse prevention. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. In response to child abuse and neglect, Children's Home and Aid has a Parents Care Plus Share program, which offers positive parenting alternatives to break the cycle of abuse, said Regional Program Coordinator Darcy Thompson. Nearly 230 parents and 220 children in Central Illinois have participated in the program so far this year. The agency urges people to put a blue light bulb in their porch light during April to show support for prevention of child abuse and neglect. Other Blue Bow campaign events this month include Lego Family Fun Night, April 18th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Children's Home Plus Aid Scott Early Learning Center, 119 East Taylor Street, Bloomington. Food, games, and prizes are free and open to the public. Children's Discovery Museum goes blue, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 22nd, at the museum at Uptown Circle in Normal. Museum staff will wear blue, decorate the museum with blue bows, and offer a blue bow craft. 7th Annual Taking Steps to End Child Abuse 5K Color Run, 1 Mile Walk is 9 a.m. April 29th at Fairview Park in Normal. The event is in memory of Jack and Duncan Lichtenberg of Leroy, who died as victims of child abuse. The $35 fee for adult participants supports the Family Visitation Center, where families experiencing domestic violence or high-conflict divorce have a safe place to visit or transfer children between family visits. And we'll move now to some international news with this headline, Sweden has been attacked. Multiple people dead and injured after truck slams into store. A hijacked beer truck crashed into an upscale department store in central Stockholm on Friday, killing at least two people, according to Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven, who called the crash a terror attack. Live television footage showed smoke coming out of the upscale Ahlins department store on the city's pedestrian street, Drottninggatan. The store is where the truck smashed into the area about 3 p.m. People in the downtown area fled in panic. Authorities evacuated the city's central station, which serves regional trains and the Swedish capital's subway system, which was a few hundred yards away. All trains to and from the main station were halted, and two large shopping malls in the capital were shut down. Sweden has been attacked, he said in a nationally televised press conference. This indicates that it is an act of terror. Broadcaster SVT said at least five people were killed in the attack, while Swedish radio reported three dead, but police could not immediately confirm those reports. The country's intelligence agency said a large number of people were wounded in the crash. We stood inside a shoe store and heard something, and then people started to scream, witness Jan Granroth told a Swedish newspaper. I looked out of the store and saw a big truck. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack, and police in a later news conference said no one has been arrested, contradicting earlier Swedish media reports that one person was in custody. We have no contact with the person or persons who drove the truck, Sweden's top police chiefs told reporters. Right now we have no one arrested, he said, who urged people not to drive into central Stockholm. Swedish beer maker Spendrup said one of its trucks had been hijacked earlier Friday. It's one of our delivery trucks. In connection with a delivery to a restaurant called Caliente, someone jumped into the truck and drove it away while the driver was unloading his delivery. He said the original beer truck driver was not injured. And we're going to take a short break now and return with the second part of the Pantograph for Friday, April 7th. Please stay tuned.